Welcome to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptic prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 6, Why We Love Horror.
So, Chris, sometimes people are quite taken aback when they see the name of our website, Really Awful Movies.
Reallyawfulmovies.com. They think, oh, this is a site devoted to just terrible movies that we're slagging off. But that couldn't be further from the truth. Yeah, the title was actually inspired by something my mom said to me. Why are you like all these really awful movies?
Yes.
So we thought this is sort of the misperception people have of kind of this low budget fare that we've been indulging in for last year.
And the horror genre in particular, yeah.
The horror genre, yes.
Last year, our lifetimes, basically.
Our lifetimes, yeah. So we've had to find ourselves on these sort of on the defensive, defending these sort of crap movies that we really quite enjoy, okay. And that there's a lot more to be said for than be dismissive of. Mm-hmm. Let's put it
and,
that way.
You know, when you say a crap movie, I mean one man's trash is another man's treasure, right?
Definitely.
I mean, just because a movie is considered to be crap by, you know, the general public does not mean it's crap. I mean, mm-hmm. These are great movies. You know, I mean, it's funny because we say really awful movies, and we've had one or two people take us to task because they say, well,
dare you call Demons awful?
Or you've reviewed Eraserhead, you're calling it awful, and I'm like, okay, well, I gave Eraserhead 5 stars. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look in the dictionary, awful does have 2 meanings. It can mean terrible,
mm-hmm. or it can mean full of awe.
Yep. Reverence. So, mm-hmm. I mean, awful can mean awful, or can mean really, really good. But yeah, for this particular podcast, we want to sort of explore what it is about horror, B-movies, genre movies, low-budget movies that we love so much. And not only that, we also want to talk about the roots of our roots, how we got into the genre. Mm-hmm. So, Chris, you want to start with...
Sure. I guess I could say by way of entry to the genre, it wasn't actually through a horror film. It was through, of all things, a Christopher Plummer film. You know him, obviously, from The Sound of Music. The Hills Are Alive.
Yeah. Or is that The Hills Have Eyes?
The Hills Have Eyes.
Okay.
The Hills Have Eyes with The Sound of... Anyway, this was a Sir Arthur Conan Doyle adaptation. It was an imagining of Jack the Ripper being investigated by Sherlock Holmes and Watson. And it was called Murder by Decree.
Okay.
And I saw this as a young kid on my grandparents' farm on TV late one night. And, of course, Jack the Ripper, Victorian, you know, London's East Side. And Jack the Ripper is butchering all these ladies of the evening, yep. In Whitechapel with his top hat, mm-hmm. and the image really stuck with me, and I was mortified and just terrified by this movie to the point where when I went to bed that night, under the covers I was listening to the radio so I could get to sleep, and I just put on, I guess, well, we should say we're in Canada, so it's hockey is huge here, so I actually put on a play-by-play of some 2-bit hockey game, like a minor league hockey game, play by play, just so I could sleep. And I was sweating under the covers. Wow. I was so terrified.
Sorry to interrupt you.
I know. 11, so that, yeah, Murder by Decree.
You're talking about Jack the Ripper. What was that song in Spinal Tap? You're a saucy.
Naughty one, saucy Jack. Yeah, yeah, musical that based on the life of Jack
the
Ripper.
Yeah. Was that in the Murder by Decree? Because I haven't seen this one, so...
It's well worth it. I think it's 1983. Okay. It's incredibly atmospheric. It's a period piece. Mm-hmm. It's got fantastic acting. You can't go wrong with Christopher Plummer. He's one of Canada's finest exports, in
indeed,
my opinion.
Yep.
But anyway, how about yourself?
Okay, before I suppose, how old are you at that point?
What? Yeah, I guess 10 or 11.
I
was just bowled over by this thing.
Okay, and before we talk about myself, I just want to ask, so that was your sort of introduction, but mm-hmm. then what was the next step? What happened after that?
Well, I guess you always wanted to sort of challenge yourself, mm-hmm. and it's sort of like a gamesmanship, and you want to see how much you can take psychologically.
Okay.
And the next step up was Night of the Living Dead, which was on television one Halloween, and it would have been a couple years.
Was that City TV?
City TV for those of you listening all over the world. It's this sort of a ragtag station that could in Toronto used to, in the 70s or 80s, run what were called baby blue movies.
Right.
So after 11 or I guess midnight, they would mm-hmm. run these sort of grindhouse low-budget
Baby Blues or softcore porn, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the thing is, City TV, which, by the way, for those who've seen Videodrome, Civic TV was modeled after
City TV.
City TV. City TV was a scrappy station, sort of street-level DIY, run by Moses Neimer, which played incredible movies. I mean, when I say incredible, I mean like movies that would not be on TV. I remember seeing Phantom of the Paradise for the first time.
Yeah, Eating Raoul late at night, again, 2 or 3 in the morning.
And they wouldn't cut the movies, so you had all the nudity, all the gore, all the stuff we love. Intact.
Yeah.
A lot of us, I think, here in Toronto discovered horror through City TV. Now, City TV is today a shell of what it once was. Mm-hmm. It's now owned by a major media conglomerate,
almost as Lloyd Kaufman would say.
Yeah, I mean, for those that aren't Canadian, I almost like a Rupert Everett type of character. You know what I mean? It's not what it used to be, but yeah. So I would wager that when you saw NOTLD, it was on City TV, mm-hmm. And yeah, that must have left quite the impression.
It did, but it was sort of a more benign introductory to the genre, as I said. Well, if you can even call it that, it was 1968. When it was released, and it was black and white, so as a 12-year-old, you're sort of it's the shallow end of the pool kind of thing. Not to diminish it by any means, okay, but as far as gore goes, it was the perfect perfect gateway drug.
Yeah.
It was gory, but not in a more palatable way.
Really so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I mean, my story is very different from Chris's in the sense that I spent. My adolescence, avoiding horror altogether. I mean, I was afraid of my own shadow. I could not take a horror film. I remember one year I was at overnight camp. I was probably around 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And on rainy days, when we couldn't do outdoor activities, they would pile us into the barn and we would watch a movie. And most of the time they were pretty...
Sleepaway Camp Massacre?
No. I mean, they were benign movies. Like Grease or, that sort of pablum. Yeah. But anyway... very sort of inoffensive movies, but then one day they decided to air Nightmare on Elm Street. And I ran out of that barn screaming. I mean, I couldn't take it. Mm-hmm. I literally was I couldn't watch a horror movie. I mean, there were certain ones. I remember going to friends' houses for slumber parties, and they would play a horror film. I think Wes Craven's Shocker comes to mind. That was pretty, it wasn't that great. Anyway, the reality is those who know me know that I live horror. I'm a horror fanatic.
You have what, 3 Vincent Price tattoos?
3 Vincent Price tattoos. Mm-hmm. I got Christopher Lee tattoos. I got Boris Karloff tattoos. I got Jason tattoos. My apartment is a shrine to horror. I mean, how did I go from that to who I am now? Well, in my early 20s, I was working in a video store and...
You could have been Quentin Tarantino.
I could have been Quentin Tarantino. It was a really weird video store, though, in the sense that it wasn't a Blockbuster. It was a sort of a mom and pop store. It had a really bizarre back catalog in the sense that it didn't have, like, we had no Star Wars movies. We had no Indiana Jones movies. Hmm. You might have had, like, a few of a series, whatever. So anyway, one day I said to myself, and here I am in my early 20s, enough is enough. I'm going to watch a horror flick. So we didn't have Friday the 13th Part 1, we didn't have Friday the 13th Part 3, but we had 2 and 4. So I took them home, and I put in Friday the 13th Part 2, and have you seen Friday the 13th Part 2?
Oh, of course.
Sackhead Jason?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that film was an endurance test for me. I mean, you gotta remember, I mean, even like, this is somebody who, I was still afraid of my own shadow. And I'm watching this movie, I mean, this movie was heavily influenced by Bay of Blood by Mario Bava, but I mean... All I remember is, like, I mean, it was gritty. This was not the Jason I knew with the hockey mask. I mean, this was like, deformed, hillbilly, backwoods, Sackhead Jason. It was scary, man. Mm-hmm. And I watched it. I was sweating. I mean, you know, I was not 10. I was in my 20s. But yeah, I was terrified. But you know what? I endured. I made it through that movie.
And left an indelible impression.
It did. And when it was over, I sort of wanted more. And I kind of like, okay, well, I kind of, you know, test the waters. I dipped my toe in.
Yeah.
Let's go a little further. So the next one was part four. And
you didn't start at part one, as naturally anyone
would. Well, the video store only had every even numbered one in the sequel, 2, 4, and 6. It's not even a joke, it's true. And part four, I think, is the best.
Damn those people not returning those movies.
Yeah, exactly. Part four is, I think, the best in the series. That's the quote unquote final chapter. Mm-hmm. As we know, the word final is very, very loose in the world of horror. But yeah, I mean. Again, getting through final chapter, quite the endurance test, but at that point, I started feeling something within me. There was something like gestating within me.
It wasn't indigestion.
No. And it wasn't like a chest burster, like an alien either. It was, I don't know, I felt brave, I felt strong.
Yeah, pushing the limits.
And I felt like I wanted more, you know? Mm. So I started taking out more movies, you know, and then I go beyond Friday the 13th, and I started, you know, like doing a lot of research, and I started reading books, and I started hearing about names like Argento and Fulci and so on and so forth, and you know, making treks downtown to get these Italian horror movies, and being blown away by what I saw. And all of a sudden I'm like, I just can't get enough. I cannot get enough. And the interesting thing is I kept wanting to push my limits further and further and further.
It was this same with me growing up in sort of, you know, a nondescript suburb that's best known for producing the rock band Rush. So this is North Toronto, and it's, you know, a bunch of semi-detached homes,
my aunt went to high school with Gay Lee.
Yeah. So, middle class, sort of dull neighborhood. And, yeah, again,
night by night,
from here, yeah, we won't sing anymore. And, yeah, just wanting to push the limits after Night of the Living Dead. It was more of a communal thing. So my buddy Ari, we went to the local strip plaza variety
strip
store.
Or strip plaza?
Yeah, not that you know, precocious, but went to the local strip plaza and somehow got our hands on Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So that was movie number 3, which we'll be talking about shortly. But of course, with sort of this false teen bravado, when a group of us, I think it was 4 or 5 of us, were watching, we were disappointed by the relative lack of gore in it, because we were psyching ourselves up to be terrified.
Right.
And when we weren't, we were saying, oh, this is crap, you know. But I recently had a chance to revisit it, and it was just an incredible movie. But of course, that comes from the, you know, again, the bravery that comes with watching it with 4 or 5 of your friends. So anyway, yeah, pushing your limits. And then all bets were off after that point. We rented every film with Massacre in the title. Me and my friends got together and hosted horror-themed nights where we'd rent all of Sleepaway Camp Massacres, all the Slumber Party Massacres, all the Hospital Massacres, even though there's only one. And anything with Massacre, we would rent and get snacks.
Did you rent Massacre?
No, I would like to make Massacre. Somebody fund that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's how it all started.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny too, because I mean, my friends were doing that. They were getting, but I would always opt out, right? Mm-hmm. So because my discovery of horror happened in my early 20s, I mean, I was doing the same thing, but by myself.
Yeah.
And after a while, I started talking about these movies a lot, and I started like, oh my God, I just saw this incredible movie called Suspiria. I mean, it's like nothing I've ever seen before. You guys got to see. And people are like, what's happening to you? Like, what's going on with you? Like, why are you into this, like this sick stuff? You used to be such a nice guy. I'm like, you know what I mean?
Well, it came part and parcel with being also a fan of metal, as you were growing up.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was a subculture that was, you know, unto itself. And there was a lot of crossover, a lot of overlap between the two fan bases. Mm-hmm. It was sort of extreme music and extreme cinema that really alienated a lot of people growing up.
But it's funny how I got that, like, you used to be such a nice guy. Like, what is it about being into horror that all of a sudden removes the niceness from you? I mean, you know, we went to a horror convention not long ago, Horrorama, and I mean, a nicer group of people in one room you could not meet. Horror fans are nice, well-adjusted people, you know?
Yeah.
But not with, you know, without getting too far into the psychology of horror. I mean, yeah, for some reason people think like, okay, if you're into horror, I mean, there's got to be something psychologically wrong with you, but that is so not the case.
Hey, people have been into horror for hundreds of years. It just depends on the medium. I mean, you know, the grim fairy tales, there's a story called The Juniper Tree where a stepmother decapitates her stepson and puts him in a stew. So this was just being recount it to youngsters.
Yeah. I mean, all the original fairy tales were
Cinderella
horrific.
Cinderella with pecking out the eyeballs by birds. I mean, this stuff is horrific.
Hansel and Gretel.
All this stuff.
Little Red Riding Hood, originally she was eaten by the wolf.
Yeah.
Well, of course, that was, you know.
So, much like, you know, rap has been unfairly maligned, because when, in reality, blues songs were all about shooting people. And from the 20s to the 60s, every blues song is about shooting your woman, shooting a cop, shooting everyone who stands in your way. Same with early country.
Yep.
So it's unfairly maligned as being violent or somehow oppressive. And really, it couldn't be further from the truth. So that's really how we got into it.
Okay, so yeah. I mean, there's definitely the sort of like visceral sort of thrill of watching a horror movie and sort of getting through. It's almost like riding a roller coaster, you know what I mean? I too was afraid of roller coasters, and I mean
I still am.
You are.
Weak stomach.
Okay, so I mean, yeah, I mean, when you endure that, so there's that, but then there's something else that you get from it as well.
A sense of relief, for sure.
Yeah. I mean,
identification with the protagonist, and generally just wanting them to extricate themselves from it. You're in no way identifying yourself with the killer.
Chris, I'm going to have to disagree with you. There's sometimes, I mean, I think
some people you want to be killed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is the odd movie where you do identify the antagonist, but usually for good reason.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about, you know, like the annoying sort of, you know, modern horror where they're just complete fodder for, you know, the chainsaw, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, most of the time you do root for the protagonist. Although, I mean, with the litany of Friday sequels, I mean, I never had the pleasure of seeing one in the theater. Did you?
No.
Because what I heard is that by the time they rolled around to, like, you know, 7 and 8, the audience was chanting along with every kill. 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, whatever. I mean, look, as far as...
I got to confess, we did count kills, me and my friends, and that was another reason Texas Chainsaw disappointed, because I believe the body count was a mere 5, and we had something like, well, anything with Massacre in the title other than that would have had 10, 20. And so we thought, oh, yeah, it wasn't... And again, not being overly gory.
How is this different than, you know, the Romans going to the Colosseum and watching, you know, or, you know, seeing the...
Not at all, for sure. UFC or whatever.
But there's something else about horror. And I think what it is that, you know, there's certain things in life that we repress. You know what I mean? Like, there's certain... I mean, for example, we're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Every person is going to die. Mortality is something we do not... In this culture, at least, we do not face head on. Horror movies force us to face mortality. Horror movies force us to face the things we don't want to face. And in doing so, through watching these movies, I think we come out of it more like more well-adjusted people.
Mm-hmm. Arguably, yeah, I hope so.
No, I really do. I mean, Stephen King basically said that, in one of his essays, he goes, everybody is insane. I mean, we're all insane. All of us have alligators. We got to keep them fed, right? Those that actually go out and do unspeakable acts are the ones that aren't feeding the alligators, right? By watching horror movies, you're keeping the alligators fed, okay?
True enough.
So, I mean,
you're just dangling this piece of meat above the sewer and ready to feed that alligator.
Yeah. So, I mean, okay, so there's that. I mean, and we also want to talk about why we're into why we really like the low budget sort of... I guess, for lack of a better term, trauma-esque movies, although we love trauma. Did you want to talk about that a bit? Or?
Well, as you're no doubt aware from listening to this, this podcast is very low budget.
Ooh.
We respect people who can get things done without tons of money and focus groups and everything behind them. These are people who really make these movies out of love.
Yeah.
They get their friends, they cast them in it. Frequently, as is the case with the Texas Chainsaw, the entire cast basically got nothing, you know, compensation-wise to be involved in it. But everyone just loves to be involved in these films.
Yeah, I mean, horror filmmakers...
And that shines through,
I mean, it's made by film lovers for film lovers.
In the way that something like P.S. I Love You or some piece of crap movie or Titanic or something like that, it's really not...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just movies made by committee for idiots. I mean, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
No offense if you like Titanic, but, you know.
Like P.S. I Love You, stop listening to this podcast immediately.
Yes,
cease
indeed.
And desist.
You're not our target audience. But, so, why do we love horror? Why not love horror? Doug Bradley was asked, why horror? He goes, why comedy?
Yeah.
In other words, you know, like, why do I have to defend my love for horror? Why does nobody else have to defend their love for other genres? I mean, you like comedy, but no one knows why you like to laugh. I mean, people are falling. People are pratfalls and slapstick and getting, you know, hit in the nuts, and you're laughing, and, I mean, there's nothing. That's okay, but, you know, watching somebody getting hacked by a machete, that you got to sort of justify, you know? Yeah. So why do we love horror? I think the best answer to that is, why not horror?
Why not?
Now, I wanted to say, so you talked about Night of the Living Dead. You talked about TCM. You talked about Murder by Decree, was it?
Murder by Decree.
Is there any other movie that had an indelible impression on you that you can think of?
Well, it was either Hospital Massacre or Demons. And probably, I guess the former, because Hospital Massacre is, again, something I rented with my friend Craig in this Toronto suburb, and just being introduced to this genre by way of some anonymous sort of masked protagonist, and there's no sort of raison d'etre for his doing what he does, and there's just no explanation and no backstory, and just a guy, well, there was in that case a very sort of tenuous backstory, as there often is sort of shoehorned into these types of movies, but for the most part, there's not often backstory, and you just have some sort of random killer who's just laying waste to the cast, and it just makes you wonder why. And again, it's just confronting your mortality and why bad things happen to good people.
But I mean, that's life. Like,
that's,
you know,
life.
Why?
It's a metaphor for life.
Yeah, totally. Yeah? I mean, why do bad things happen to good people?
These poor people who went in for a mammogram or whatnot in this hospital, in this eponymous hospital, and they get butchered by this masked guy. Why? Why not?
Yep.
Why horror? Why not?
Why not? Exactly. I mean, for me, like I said before, I mean, when I started, because I was sort of a late bloomer to the horror, I'm going to start with, you know, your Halloweens, your Nightmares,
the Howling, your Reanimators.
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean, of course, your Fridays, whatever, but, I mean, when my horror love went into overdrive was when I discovered the Italians. I mean, Dario Argento, Lucio Fulci, Mario Bava, I mean, this was unhinged movie making.
Yeah.
Unlike anything I'd ever seen before. I mean, I don't know. I think the first Argento film I saw was Tenebrae, and that was incredible. That just totally blew me away. I remember seeing Zombie by Fulci.
Oh, for sure. Likewise.
Nothing like it. Nothing.
And Suspiria as well.
Suspiria,
just,
I mean,
more style over substance, where it's just anything you can do to make it beautiful.
Suspiria,
these were very beautiful movies.
Suspiria is a fairy tale.
Yeah?
Suspiria is a fairy tale. I mean, it's a fairy tale in its purest form. It's a dark fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. I say that to people sometimes too, and they look at me like I got eight heads. Oh, this horror movie is beautiful. It's got a beautiful story. It's got an important message. It's got great subtext. And then they're like, what's the matter with you? You know? You need to be committed. No. You know what I mean? Open your eyes. Open your mind. And don't just dismiss horror. You know what I mean? Because a lot of times, these movies have a lot to say about the human condition.
Definitely.
There's a lot of metaphors, a lot of allegories. Not to get too, you know, deep. There's a lot of subtext. Horror is a
right. Yeah, whether it's the, you know, the communist threat of invasion of the body snatchers, you
got
it. Name it, anything.
Or, you know, for example, like, you know, Dawn of the Dead, you know, the
consumerism.
Exactly.
Yeah,
zombies are quite interesting, very, very malleable creatures that can be used to comment on a lot of different things. So, I mean, we could talk about this for hours, obviously.
Oh, we definitely could.
But I mean, maybe we'll revisit this in a future podcast.
Oh, we definitely will.
But, you know what? If anybody is listening to this, I hope somebody or one or two people are.
Yeah, share your thoughts.
We'd love
to know how you got into horror. And for more, check out reallyawfulmovies.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.